Let's just do this thing. It's the news, according to me. That's what it's according to me. Me. Just me. According to me. Oh, goodness gracious. It is Wednesday. Trash day here at the family. Wednesday. Wishy-washy Wednesday is what we call it on the show. It's at my house. It's trash day because we take the trash on Wednesday to the dump. To the dump we go with the trash. Wednesday, November 26th, 8:53 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2025, which is very quickly going to come to an end here. We're almost in the last week of the next month. That's what that is. Good morning, folks. Welcome aboard. We have a little bit of a show to get into here. I'm a little bit later than I planned, but I got in kind of late last night. I got in about midnight last night, and by the time I got to bed, it was after 1 o'clock. So, needless to say, there was no sleeping in with the dogs, getting me up at 6:30 this morning. They got me up a couple times through the night, but they just wanted to come over for pets because they couldn't believe I was home. Yeah, I guess that's what that was all about. Anyway. So we have We have a few things to get into today, interestingly enough. I want to talk a little bit about this meeting with Mamdani, between Trump and Mamdani. There's a lot of rhetoric going on around here, and I want to kind of just lay some things out there for you to think about. And by the way, I'd like to know what you think about what I think about this stuff. You can call 812-379-8778. I don't ask for much. There's no charge for this show. And, you know, it's a free thing. It's sponsored by me. I have no sponsor, so I can say whatever I want. I don't care about monetization and all that stuff. People can't say words that they need to say. They can't just talk because they have monetization issues. Well, if I say the word pedophile, I'll get demonetized. I don't care. I'm going to say what it is. If that's what you are, that's what I'm going to call you, or if that's allegedly what you are. By the way, I'm not a doctor. I'm not much of a speaker this morning either. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. And I'm not a legal advisor, as you might say, whatever you want to call it. Anything that I say about people is just alleged. It's alleged. Everything's alleged. Alleged to be, or allegedly. Well, that's my full disclaimer there before I start calling people names. I have a few things to get into about this meeting. But first I want to get into my cup. I have chai. By the way, I'm at my home studio this morning. I'm kind of hoping to be in the worldwide headquarters tomorrow morning. I'd like to do a live show this week. I really feel like I need to do that. It's so windy today. I don't even feel like going outside today. It's almost dangerous to go out there. I got an email from the power company. Potential outages because of winds, high winds today. They're talking about 45 to 55 knot winds. Gusting up, you know, beyond that. This is officially every year we kind of get this. I watch the weather a lot just because that's kind of the environment I have to work in. And I have a tendency to pay attention to some of those things. And it's every year, every fall, we get a massive windstorm. And typically after that is when winter has officially arrived. That's when the weather change kind of happens. And I think what it's happening there is that's just my theory because I'm not a weatherman. On the list of many things, I am not. But I do understand weather pretty well. I've made an observation over the last 63 years that it seems. By the way, happy birthday to those of you. A friend of mine has a birthday about the same time. I think it might be his birthday. Is it this week? I think it's this week. Just text me and say this week. It was this week, or maybe I missed it completely. I don't have my calendar in front of me. I don't remember. Well, happy birthday to y'all anyway. If it's your birthday this month or this year, if you have a birthday this year, happy birthday. There you go. How's that? Get covered, everybody. If you don't have a birthday this year, then that's, let me just say, you're a freak. That's what you are. Well, I have, what was I talking about? It's not like I get on a sidetrack. By the way, in my backup cup, see, this is why you don't pay for this program, because I am all over the place. This is I'm talking five different topics at the same time. And this is, I just added a sixth one. So I have tea, peach, homemade sweet peach tea. It's the last of my gallon that I made last week. It's actually still pretty good. It's the key to keeping tea from going funky is to keep it relatively cold. You have to keep it pretty cold, and you have to have your refrigerator, you know, pretty cold, and to not move it around much. I've noticed that if you keep it sealed really well in a container that seals. It can't just be a pitcher that has an open end. It can't allow air to get to it on a regular, like, in and out basis. You have to have that tea sitting in a container that's fairly well sealed, not a lot of air getting out, and it has to be fairly cold, and it has to be kept very still, relatively still, not be shaken up and all stuck. That seems to make a difference, and it still tastes as almost as fresh as the day it was made. It has been sitting here for a little while. It's got some. No, that's much better. That slurp was a little bit better because I had put some ice in there, and I had been sitting for about an hour. And some of the ice at the top there kind of melted into some watery. It kind of smelled. It tasted a little bit watered down there. The first one, because I just kind of got all the water off the top of it. But anyway, I digress. What was I talking about? I think I was talking about the weather. Was I talking about the weather? Yeah, talking about fall weather, the windy weather. That's what we're having. That's right. That's what I was talking about. We have a lot of this windy weather going on, and it's. But every fall, it seems like we get this. In the spring, we get kind of the same kind of thing. We get this. I don't know what you want to call it. We get a kind of a final thunderstorm, windy thunderstorm. That blows in, and it's kind of the beginning of spring. From that point on, things continue to get warmer. We don't usually have another cold snap after that. We will not have very many more warm snaps after this windy weather this week. I guarantee you that. It's of course almost the end of November. It's coming up on Thanksgiving here. There probably will be a show tomorrow morning, by the way. And I'm kind of thinking about doing a live show, a Thanksgiving morning show. I might just do that from the worldwide headquarters. We're not going to have anything family-wise going on, at least with my or either side of the family that I'm aware of till the weekend. Of course, I'll be gone on the weekend because that's the way things work for me. But our family is getting together, so it's kind of a So I'll miss out on all that. But I have all the food. But no, don't worry. We're going to be having some food. My wife and I are going to have a little food thing we're doing here at the house. So we'll have a big turkey, let the dogs chase the turkey around the yard, and then eventually we'll eat it. We have, I hope you guys aren't taking me seriously. I have the wind blows through right there, and I can feel it going through my ears, right? It goes in one ear and out the other, and I have a little barometer inside there that tells me what's going on with the weather. Little wind vane. So that's the kind of stuff I got in my head. Anyway, let's talk about Mom Donnie. There was this, let's get on to the political stuff. That's what you all tuned in for, besides the cup. I mean, I know that's kind of the main thing, but you might notice that my voice is a little bit raspy this morning. I don't know why, other than the fact that I got in it, got to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning and got up at six. I don't know why else my voice would be raspy, but it is a little bit raspy. Yesterday was a long day. I started off in Washington, D.C. And I ended up going to Raleigh-Durham and then back to Chicago. I flew all over the place yesterday. And then drove, you know, several hours to get home, of course, from Chicago. And traffic wasn't bad. I was kind of surprised. As we were flying into Chicago, I was kind of looking outside at the traffic on the highways. It seemed like it was kind of backed up in a lot of places. At the airport, it certainly was. But I got away from there. Where I park is not in the pickup area. So I got out of there pretty quickly. And then, I didn't really have any slowdowns along the way, really much of anything. It's kind of amazing because usually there is. Late enough in the day, I guess, that it was pretty well gone. I would imagine today through the rest of this weekend is going to be crazy busy at times. So anyway, Mamdani is kind of under some attacks now because he went. I talked about him a little bit yesterday. I think I played some things from him yesterday about how he doesn't answer questions. You can ask him a yes or no question, and he goes into this very good. He's very good at it. Has this whole thing where he goes into this. How did you get down here? My puppy just came down to visit me, and I had the gate locked upstairs. I'm assuming that my wife let him down here. So hopefully he will behave. If he doesn't, I will blame my wife. He was barking earlier, so that's why I left him up there. Of course, now he's. She probably didn't like him barking up there, so she let him down here. Regardless of all that, I have this thing with Mamdani. He doesn't answer questions, and I think that it frustrates people to no end when you ask him a simple yes or no question, and he goes off into this diatribe explanation of something that dodges the question completely almost every time you ask him a question. He was on 60 Minutes. I was playing that thing yesterday. If you didn't hear the show from yesterday, I played some video of that. Or some audio from the video. And you could tell she was very frustrated because they ask him the same question over and over, and he keeps, it's kind of like the same thing happens with Hakeem Jeffries. He does the same exact thing. You ask him a simple yes or no question. It's just yes or no. Just tell me. And he ends up going off on this tirade, some kind of, I have to set up context. No, it's a yes or no question. This interview would be over in 2 minutes if he just gave me a yes or no question. But your answer takes 2 minutes, and it never answers the question, which is why they have to ask it again. That's what happens there. It just continues to go. And so it's very frustrating for an interviewer to do that because you're asking the questions on behalf of your listeners. You're asking the questions that you think people want to know the answers to, and you're not giving an answer to it, and so it gets frustrating. Can you imagine that, being around that all the time? Now, I guarantee you, he has an answer. There's an answer in there somewhere that he's not giving you. He's avoiding the answer. What's frustrating about that is we all know the answer. If you ask somebody, did you do this or that? Did you do this or, did you do this? And the person will say, well, there was a blah, 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 blah. The answer is yes, you did that. If it was something they were supposed to do and they didn't do it, they'll give you that kind of a doctrine. Then they didn't do it. For something they weren't supposed to do and they did it and they start giving you this, it's the way a child will act. I always say it's the junior high syndrome. People who are, especially, it seems like it's at the age of most junior high, girls are really good at this at the junior high age, 12 to 13 years old, it seems like. Now, I don't have one, never had one, but I was a summer camp counselor for several years dealing with junior high kids. And you try to confront them about something and they start going into this big long explanation of why they go into this whole reasoning thing. They think they're going to talk their way out of it. This is what Jasmine Crockett does when she's confronted with, you said something about Jeffrey Epstein. Donated money to Lee Zeldin's campaign. And he took money from Jeffrey Epstein, from a man named Jeffrey Epstein. That's the way she said it, a man named Jeffrey Epstein. And the way she said it, it sounded like she was, she was being very clear about this. This was a man named, there's a man named Jeffrey Epstein gave money to Lee Zeldin. Now, then, of course, the news media says, well, I said a Jeffrey Epstein. No, you didn't say a Jeffrey Epstein. You said a man named Jeffrey Epstein. The implication there was that it was Jeffrey Epstein, the one that's, you know, the famous one, the infamous one, I should say. And it's, and then she has the, all this, when confronted about it, she goes through this whole long diatribe about what, you know, why she said what she said, because it's the Republicans' fault, because they only gave us 20 minutes. They threw this at us at real time, and blah, 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 blah. I had to, all of a sudden, there's no acceptance of, okay, I was wrong, and let's move on. They can't do that. It's out of their vocabulary. They can't just admit that they were wrong, admit that they made a mistake. That does not happen. In their little world, they don't make mistakes. Or if they do, they're like, well, everybody makes mistakes. I'm just a human. All of a sudden, there's, you know, it's always excusable. And it's typical human nature to do that. But it is amplified in junior high girls, in my opinion. Some of them, not all of them. And boys, they've got their problems too. They have their own ways of trying to cover things up. And I'm not getting into one being better than the other. All I'm saying is they each have their own ways of doing things. But that's what's happening here with Mom Donnie. He's acting like a 12-year-old girl. That's what I'm saying. And I think this exchange here between Trump and Mamdani, when they were asking questions of Zohran and President Trump, and they were in the Oval Office there, and it kind of bothers me that this guy's even in the Oval Office, really. It kind of does. And Trump said some very nice things to him and said, I think some conservatives will be surprised at what he's able to do. I think Trump is setting him up. Maybe Trump is losing. I don't know. I think Trump knows exactly what he's doing here. Because what happens is in this exchange, now keep in mind, Trump has just had a meeting with this guy for probably about 2 hours, I would imagine. I'm sure more than an hour. Probably met with Mamdani about 2 hours. The whole thing took, you know, all the niceties, all the stuff that happened had to happen. And then they have this private message for an hour or whatever. They're talking to each other for a while, working through issues. And then they have this little press conference. So he's been dealing with this guy for long. And Trump's not, you know, he's not a teenager. He's got some life experience. He's probably talked to more people one-on-one in rooms making deals, more people in his lifetime than Mamdani has ever even talked to, ever seen, or whatever. This is a guy who understands people from the ground up. He has talked to the construction workers out on the building site. He has talked to world leaders. He's able to speak. I would bet he can read people before they even open their mouth. I've talked to a lot of people. I've dealt with a lot of people. I've worked with a lot of people in very intense, very close, conditions. Stressful conditions. And I have to tell you, you learn a lot about somebody very quickly, and you start to size somebody up. As an airline pilot, I was a captain for an airline back in the day, and even as an instructor as well. But you fly for thousands and thousands of hours. You're working with people like that, and you're constantly working with different people all the time in very intense, standardized, somewhat stressful situations. It's a very tedious line of work. And you start to size people up very quickly. I was at the point, you're flying all the time, flying every day, and you're working with different people all the time. When someone would literally walk into the cockpit, the flight deck as we call it now, walk onto the flight deck and say hi to you, the first introduction to someone, it was pretty clear what kind of person that they are right off the bat. I could almost tell just by the way they greeted me or the way they would receive a greeting from me. It's usually pretty obvious how everything's going to go. Because I've had these greetings, these moments where you greet some at least 1,000 times. More than that, probably. Along with all the other life experience that you have just dealing with people, you know, working in any kind of service industry or whatever you're doing, starting businesses, having, you know, all kinds of, I've had businesses where I had to be at a trade shows where you're talking to hundreds and hundreds of people every day about your product. And you can see them coming a mile away. The way they walk up to your booth, whatever it is, you know where this guy's. I had this one business where I had a trade. I went to a trade, several trade shows for over the couple of years. And these people would walk. There's always this. The product I was selling was an electronic product. And I could always tell when the guy was going to walk up. He started walking up to the thing and looking at the product, and he starts coming up. And the first thing that would come out of his mouth is, "I'm an electrical engineer." I could almost say it before he said it. Could certainly say it in unison with him. "I'm an electrical engineer." You'd be amazed at how many electrical engineers there are out there going around to these trade shows. I don't know if he's working as one, but he's, you know, I don't know. It's, there were an awful lot of them. So let's just put it that way. And they all started asking me technical questions. And of course, I'm not an electrical engineer. I can barely spell electric. The word electric. Now, I know what happens when I plug something in, typically. If I plug it in wrong, I know what happens then, too. Yeah. Anyway, so this is the kind of thing we're dealing with. So my point is, Donald Trump can read people a mile away. And he's had to put up with this guy for an hour. And here he is, he gets asked this question. And this is Donald Trump's response. It's classic. Let's listen in here. I'll tell you how. This is my take on what just happened here.
Are you affirming that you think President Trump is a fascist?
I've spoken about.
That's okay. You can just say yes.
Okay.
Okay. It's easier. It's easier than explaining it. I don't mind.
Sorry, old man cough. He just pats him on the side of the arm and goes, you know, it's just say it, you are. It's easier than just trying to explain it. He knows where he's going. He's going to go into this whole big long diatribe of, oh well, my Donald Trump and I. Blah, blah, blah. He doesn't want to hear it. He's tired of hearing it. It's like, I don't have time for this. I don't have time for this to hear you go through your little thing to try to avoid the question. Just say you said what you said. Just be. And because I'm tired of you, I'm tired of this whole meeting. I've had it. Every time I've asked you a question, or every time we have a discussion, you've gone through this big long diatribe and not said anything. It's been a word salad for the last 2 hours. That's what I think was happening here. I think he, and I think part of it too was Donald Trump. You know, you're in his office. You're in his space here. You're on his yard, and you don't come in there and start taking over. He's just going to tell you what to do. He just came in and just tell him what to do. Pats him on the back, pats him on the side of the head, on the arm or whatever. Yeah, there you go, little buddy. That's the way to do it. Now the left thinks that Zoran owned Trump in this meeting. That did not happen at all. These people are living in a delusional world. It was very delusional. For one thing, Trump is sitting down. This is also something that you have to understand. Trump is sitting down in his chair in his office. And Zoran is standing there. I don't know if you know anything about authority and how, especially in certain cultures, you don't get up. If Trump was up standing up beside this guy and making it, when you stand next to, when you're being interviewed by a world leader, when there's a world leader in your office, I guarantee you he would not have been sitting down. Now, somebody like Zelensky, he probably would. But I've noticed this about Trump. He has a way of either commanding respect or respectfully demanding respect. It's very subtle stuff. And I think it's just part of his character. I don't think he sets out to do this. I think it's just part of who he is because he's dealt with so many people for so long. Now, I do want to say, if you look at a video of Donald Trump 4 years ago with him speaking, prior to being shot, there are serious differences here. And I can't candy coat it. His ability to speak and some of the things that are happening with him, I don't know if he's having dental issues. I don't know what's going on with that. Nervous. I think he, after being shot, I think that it had some effect on his facial muscles. Possibly he might have even had a Bell's palsy incident or a mild one through that whole process, which is like a facial thing because of the stress and all the stuff that goes on with that. It's a weird... like I said, I'm not a doctor. I don't know. I think that there's been some damage to nervous tissue and that kind of thing. And just the stress of what he's going through, I think he's kind of lightened up on a lot of things. Now, again, I don't see Trump as being a conservative necessarily. I think conservatives work with him more than anything. But Donald Trump is a transactional president. I don't think he's idealistic in a particular sense of the word, other than he wants to do transactions. He wants to do deals. He wants to make things move forward. However, he does not trust certain radicals in certain situations. I think that's an issue. Now, this whole thing with Hamdani in the place that he's going to be in, he's going to have a real struggle here. And this can go one of two different ways. Kathy Hochul, she's the governor of New York. This is what amazes me about these people with the getting into this whole thing about what Mamdani's. He can't do this on his own. You can't. There's not enough taxes in New York. The problem is that they're scaring people off with this idea that you're going to have free stuff because we're going to tax the rich because those evil rich people, by the way, they don't just walk around with just cash, just on their piles of cash, counting their dollar bills all day. They invest their money. You can't just sit on, most people who have money are people who have invested money. And most of it isn't in liquidation. In other words, they can't just write out a check and do something. Many of them can, but you don't just keep your money in cash because it goes away. Inflation takes it away. It steals it. You have to have it invested in something that's going to make money. It's going to grow those funds, going to grow that wealth. And usually those investments create jobs. You invest in businesses. You invest in commerce. You invest in productivity. Because those are the things that create growth and more wealth. It increases your investment. You get a return on your investment. And hopefully it outpaces inflation. And that's just kind of the way this stuff works. So these people who are rich are providing jobs. You start taxing them, start just taking them just because they have money, you're gonna take, well, you're worth $2 billion, we're gonna take half of that. Okay. I'm not going to stay here then. I'm going to go. See ya. Bye. Take me and my money. I'm going to leave. And good luck with all that. And sooner or later, you end up with people who just want free stuff because that's why they're there. If they've been promising them all the free stuff. Well, now you've got to go outside of your little economic bubble, your little, free zone. When I was a kid, There was a little time period where everybody had these little things called terrariums. Anybody ever heard of a terrarium? It's not an aquarium. An aquarium is a water thing, water environment where you have fish and put stuff in there. You got to put food in it, all this stuff. This taught me a lot about economics, but the little terrariums. And there was actually a way you could seal up a terrarium, basically. I think you had to have some air in it. I'm not sure if we had to, if we had any actually were sealed, like completely sealed. But you had a way to put, and I think you had still had to put some water in it because water would evaporate. But it was, there's also this thing where you had dew, like if you put it in a certain amount of sun, if you got a certain amount of sunlight a day, it was, and what it was like an aquarium, but it had a small lid. It was a very small opening at the top. And you put dirt in this thing, and you had planted some plants, and you had maybe you had some bugs in there, or whatever you had. It was an experiment in kind of an ecosystem type thing within a contained environment. Put a certain amount of water in there, and things would grow, and then things would die, and then things would grow back from that. And just, you know, you planted certain kinds of seeds, and you had certain kinds of bugs that would do certain kinds of things. And it was, and you put a turtle in there, you know, maybe turtle or frog. And then so it was just one of those things where, of course, the frog would eat the fly, and then, you know, then the frog would poop, and then the other fly would, you know, somehow the fly eggs would get in there. The main thing that it would do, it would stink. That was the main thing I remember from it. It was just a stinky thing. But the whole idea there was you had just little biodome here that you're trying to kind of be self-sustaining, you know, kind of be supportive of itself. It'd be able to do its own thing for a while. And eventually you'd have to, you know, do something else to add to it or whatever, take away. But this is kind of the way, you know, a city should consider themselves, but they can't just do it on their own. They have to have taxes from outside. So they have to tax people in the state, which is why when you ask somebody from New York State, if they're from Syracuse or somewhere up north, usually White Plains won't say this because they consider themselves kind of New Yorkers, sort of. I don't know. You let me know. If you're from White Plains, let me know what you think about that. But definitely people from Syracuse area up in the northern part. If you ask somebody from state of New York, you ask them where they're from, they'll say, I'm from New York. Upstate. The first thing they say is usually right after this, I'm from New York. Upstate or upstate New York is what they'll say. That they want to make very clear they're not from New York. And those are the people who get really upset when they get taxed to pay for things in New York. Their taxes go up because of New York City. And that's what Kathy Hochul is a little bit concerned about. Now, I don't know if Kathy Hochul has the fortitude, let's call it that, to push back against this. Because here's what's going to happen. You've got a very large, loud group of politicians who have the microphone right now, like AOC and some others, and who are very loud about this, you know, the social experiment that we're, you know, having here in New York City, or about to have. When things don't go well and he's not able to get the funding that he needs for the things he needs, he's going to blame Kathy Hochul. This is going to come down to a fight between him and the Democrat Party. Now, it may not be public. They may try to keep this thing on the down low. I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of shouting going on between the two of them and their people behind the scenes that we will never see. What little we do see will be the tip of the iceberg. Because there's going to be some serious arguing. I'm just about to sneeze here. I don't know why. And The tough part of this is going to be that if Kathy Hochul does not, either she's going to have to give in to it, or she doesn't give in to it, and they vilify her, and they blame all this on Kathy Hochul, which in turn, all these people in New York City, a lot of voters there, will blame Kathy Hochul for all the things that they're not getting, well, it's Kathy Hochul's fault because Mom Donnie was a wonderful guy, wanted to give us all this stuff, but Kathy Hochul was the evil stepmom up there on the, you know, up on Capitol Hill there, wouldn't give us our stuff that we want. She could put the kibosh to it. Well, because, see, states can't print money like the federal government can. They don't sell bonds. They don't do that kind of. They can't piddle around with money. They can't, you know, finagle that stuff. So I think it causes issues, and they don't know what to do with that. So what we have here is a weird kind of a scenario where the radical left, which I consider to be Mamdani, in fact, I consider Mamdani to be a radical within the radicals. This is one of those things where we talked about the cuckoo bird a while back. DSA, Democratic Socialist. That organization has allowed let's just say that there are some radicals within that group. The DSA initially was the radical group within the Democrat Party that has kind of laid its egg there, and it kind of took over. Or it's taking over, it's in the process of taking over. But what the DSA does not realize is there's another radical egg within their nest that's going to take over. And that's what Mamdani is part of. And it's all a part of something. There's a word for it. I can't remember what it is. We'll get into that more maybe tomorrow. Talk about that a little bit more. But it has to do with Islam and the whole Muslim agenda. Now, let's change gears a little bit. I think I talked a little bit about because I was in D.C. yesterday. It was kind of for a couple of days. And I did a whole lot of walking around on Monday. And went to see Lincoln, the Lincoln Memorial. I spent more time in the Air and Space Museum. It was kind of fascinating. I was in there for a while. But I went to see Lincoln Memorial and some other things. You saw some of the other memorials, the World War II Memorial, the Atlantic and Pacific fountain type of stuff. It's kind of interesting. They drained. They were pumping out the water out of the reflection pond when I was there, and it was actually empty on yesterday morning when we were flying out. We could see the reflection pond. It was completely empty. I don't know what was going on there other than they maybe clean it up, drain it all out, pull all the trash out. Maybe, I don't know what they do there. They had about 8 or 9 water pumps there, pumping the water out in the reflection pond closest to the Lincoln Memorial. The thing that, you kind of go through the things and you read things and you read some of the founding statements and the Emancipation Proclamation. You read all the stuff that's just plastered in stone everywhere around there. And the question kind of comes up in your mind, and I know that I've had this question many times about who of our founders, who were real Christians? There were deists, and there were some that were even considered. Benjamin Franklin, in fact, I don't even know if he was a deist. I don't think he was a deist. I think he was kind of weird. He's a little bit off the beaten path there. He may have even been, he was a character. He was a rascal. Now George Washington's a little bit different. The Thomas Jefferson Bible, by the way, he tore pages out of his Bible, out of the King James or whatever we're going to call it. But there is a Jefferson Bible that I think you can even buy it, the Jefferson Bible. But there are many people, many politicians who've been sworn in on the Jefferson Bible. I wonder if that's the one that Obama was sworn in on. Because there are all kinds of things in there where Jefferson basically did not believe in the deity of Christ, nothing about his miracles, some of the things. He tore a lot of things out, crossed a lot of things out, cut a lot of things out of his Bible. Many of them didn't like organized religion. They were not necessarily Christians. I would say they were deists, not theists. It's just one of those definitions that so the question is, who really was, true believers within the founding fathers, that you would call evangelical, Bible believing Christians? The nation wasn't. I think it was founded on basic Bible Judeo-Christian principles. I think you can say that fairly, maybe. Certain ideas, because it shaped the culture more back then. However, I think the nation became more Christian as time went on. There was kind of this, you had the John Wesley and all these people that were kind of shaping the nation with the way churches were growing and the kind of the revivals that we've had throughout the years through we're going to call them revivals, I guess, the evangelistic efforts that were made by the early church and some of the things that happened. And this is, I think that the nation became more Christian than it was. It wasn't necessarily founded as a Christian nation necessarily. It is not in our documents anywhere. However, it was, it opened up the doors because of religious freedom. It enabled people for Christianity to grow and expand. And there was some moral, acceptance at that time. Just, I think that's just where it went. And it did that. Now today, of course, with the advent of science and everything else that's happened, with people think is, you know, they junk science, and mostly and I think the church has kind of fallen back on its laurels. I think that Kent Ham has done a pretty good job of showing how modern day science has kind of went into some wacky ideas, taken some liberties, if you will, to instill some hypotheses. I'm not a scientist. I can't spell hypotheses. But they have, you know, built things upon hypotheses that are not true. They take a theory and they build it on from there, just like evolution or anything else. They just go on from this. Well, we assume that it's this, so that therefore this all happened. And that's kind of where they kind of lose me on their scientific observational stuff. But nonetheless, it is considered, you know, it's consensus, whatever. So it has to be true. But I think Ken Ham has done a good job of pushing back on that and kind of exposing some other individuals have done a very, very good job of that as well. But I think he's, the Creation Museum, I think it does a pretty good job of pushing back on some of those things and kind of pointing out, hey, this is, there's some other alternatives here to what we're observing here in some of this stuff. And especially in the Ark experience is very good too. It's very well done. My opinion. That's my opinion. I've been there. Wouldn't mind going back. But the, it's interesting stuff. So it's just the way our founding, but I hear people say all the time, you know, our nation was founded, you know, Thomas Jefferson was this, you know, great Bible-believing Christian or whatever. No, I don't think he was not. However, he kind of had it. I do agree with the founding principles of our nation and what they put forth as a fundamental, you know, system of government. No government is going to be perfect till the government rests on his shoulders. But it is, capital H, his. In the meantime, we do the best we can with what we have. And I think having religious freedom, liberty, individual rights that are protected, that we are endowed by, protecting those rights, I think that's all principles that we can all hopefully understand in our nation and get. I think the biggest problem we have is that our public school system has let us down with regard to helping kids understand what's going on with all this stuff. Now, in the meantime, having said all that, tomorrow's show, I'd like to get a little bit more into this whole housing thing, affordable housing. I want to talk about that a little bit. If nothing else pops up on my radar that I want to talk about, we'll be talking about affordable housing and how that. It's kind of complicated. And this Graham Stephan, I think I talked about him a little bit yesterday. I couldn't remember his name yesterday. I think I called him Graham, but I couldn't remember his last name. Graham Stephan, he's a millionaire who has had some experience with some things on the West Coast in California. And it's very typical of what we find in most situations when we talk about affordable housing and how that works. Now you can't, as an individual, you can't really make housing affordable. Now, I know there are people out there who are trying to do their part and what they can and make you know, a housing situation where they can make some affordable housing and they can do some things with having some influence. This really needs to be done on a governmental level, because there are so many things that the government steps into that gets in the way of making it possible for housing to be affordable. And there's just all kinds of aspects and facets to that whole process. And I think that that's where we need to kind of be aware of. Hopefully tomorrow I can talk about those kinds of things, what my observations are and what I think about those things are, because that's really what this show is about, because it's the news according to me. It's what I think. And I would like to know what you think about what I think. You can call 812-379-8778. And for the most part, I think that there's a lot to be discussed there. And I think that it seems crazy to me that people are paying what they're paying. In some parts of the country are just outrageous. We went through the bubble of 2008, and bubbles happen all the time with different sectors of there was the dot-com bubble, there was the housing market bubble. I think something happened in 2012 around that time where there's some crazy stuff happened at that time too. And it's about every 7 or 8 years, there's typically a cycle that we go through. There's usually a downturn every so many years, and then when it happens, it usually lasts a certain amount of time and all that stuff. God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your day, rest of your week. Have a happy Thanksgiving if I don't get to talk to you, but I will be on here probably tomorrow morning, and see you.